I am a scientist. As an undergraduate student in biology, I worked to understand phenomena at the cellular and even the subcellular level. I applied the scientific method and I learned about DNA, things that are unseen to the naked eye. I even applied electron spin resonance to understand how cell membranes work. In fact, I've had the good fortune in 1983 to be housemates with this man. His name is Saul Perlmutter, and he won the Nobel Prize in 2011 for physics, so he was my housemate. And I got to meet him in that summer when I was studying how to make hydrogen produce, how to make blue-green algae produce more hydrogen. And I was on a Department of Energy grant at UC Berkeley. So my Nobel Prize-winning housemate got mad at me once because I left the dishes in the sink, which is a common theme in my life. I don't like doing dishes. But he is a good friend, and we all broke bread on many occasions hiking the hills of Berkeley over the course of that, dare I say it, a miraculous summer where I came into my own as an adult. I'm not sure he remembers me. I emailed him when he won, and I never got a response, and that's okay. But I certainly remember him and the impact that summer had on my life and growth as a person. So last week, you heard Reverend Dawn discuss the various definitions of miracles and how the skeptic in her came to term with the idea of miracles, or perhaps she hasn't quite come to terms with it yet, but I know she's working on it. I used the term miraculous a few moments ago, but in reality, according to that basic definition of what is a miracle, my summer was not beyond explanation, nor was it inspired by the divine. My summer was miraculous because I was immersed in wonder at the vastness and splendor of this new world that I was experiencing and all these other experiences that I just could not even get my head around how amazing it was to be a part of this community. I was incredibly fortunate to rub shoulders with world-renowned scientists and future Nobel Prize winners. And for a scientist, that's the equivalent of nirvana. It's total enlightenment. It's amazing. And these are what I call, or what I believe are, Unitarian miracles. Not those things that are beyond explanation necessarily, but things that are vast and splendorous and bring us to new experiences. But I'm going to get to that explanation in a bit. I need to build my story. So although I ultimately left the study of physical sciences, my interest did not wander far when I eventually went for my PhD. I am now a social scientist. I am trying to understand the inner workings of people's motivations and decision-making processes. That giant mystery called the human brain leaves me in awe. When I was in college in 1980-something, early 80s, and I was studying biology at Marquette University, we barely tapped into understanding how the brain works. But over time, researchers have let inspiration and curiosity pull them deeper into understanding the human brain and the larger and more difficult question of human consciousness, who we are. And while we understand so much more now than we did 30 years ago about the human brain, there's still so much more to be discovered and understood. But any student of history or science knows that just because something is unknowable now doesn't mean it will always remain so. Just ask Isaac Newton, Leonardo da Vinci, and Orville and Wilbur Wright. Those four minds are inextricably linked. How, you might ask? Isaac Newton came up with the ideas of gravity. Da Vinci came up with the idea of a flying machine, and Orville and Wilbur Wright made it happen. So I recognize this every single time I look in the air and I watch a jet fly by, hopefully to some exotic location. At least I'd like to think so. I think even to my own experiences, trying to explain to my 70-plus-year-old grandmother, who was born in 1914 and had never worked in an office in her life, how a fax machine worked. I said, oh, Grandma, you could just fax that. What's a fax machine? Okay. It was beyond her comprehension and understanding, but she didn't disbelieve me. She was just in awe of it. She couldn't imagine it. She goes, and I said, well, geez, you know, it's not so complicated, but she didn't understand the way the technology worked. And I have no doubt that my very, very, very Catholic grandmother in her mind, it was a miracle that it even existed. So now, moving to our story of all ages, or time for all ages, the five Chinese brothers. It's controversial, I totally get it, and at one time it was banned because of the harmful racial stereotypes and depiction of violence against the young child, as well as the five brothers. And I don't disagree with that conclusion at all. But it gives us an interesting framework to understand this traditional view of a miracle. Although the reader, the audience, is aware of and understands how that brother, really the five brothers, survived death in several different forms, characters in the book chalk up the brother's survival to, for lack of a better word, a miracle. A sign that clearly he must be innocent if he survived death so often. Was it a miracle, really, or was it just beyond their understanding in that moment? I also think about the story relative to a stereotypical response that many Christians have when tragedy strikes. It's God's will, it was meant to be, or we don't understand why these things happen. Only God knows and has a reason. And those responses leave me personally empty because it implies that there's a personal God who's out there, is not just interested, but is enmeshed in the daily workings of each of us. Somehow this God decided that that child must die and someone else has lived. Perhaps that parent prayed harder or was more devout or was generally a better person. Therefore, their prayers were answered, but the other parents were not. Why would God say no to my prayers, but not to yours? This is why this explanation for things always falls flat for me. The tragedy around that child's death is a story that was not beyond explanation, but beyond reasons that the townspeople could understand, or perhaps were willing to even understand. And the call for revenge, akin to something like the Salem witch trials, is a response that comes from the brain's need to understand why things happen. If it's not knowable to me, I have to attribute it to a higher power so I can have an answer on which I can rest. Things don't happen for no reason, we think. But in fact, sometimes there is no reason. It's just the confluence of several things that are connected temporally, but not necessarily causally. So in other words, just because something happened at the same time doesn't mean that one thing caused the other. Miracles show up in almost every religious tradition. And when I consider biblical, Christian, or even Catholic interpretations of miracles, the presumption is that miracles come from the divine, or from something that is more so supernatural, beyond the natural order. Even in the Catholic tradition, in order to be canonized as a saint, an individual must perform at least two verifiable miracles. In essence, two inexplicable events must occur that are done in the glorification of God and can be attributed to that saint. This is a concept that also, as a scientist, makes me very uncomfortable. I know as a scientist that there were many things that could not be explained at one point or another that now have a perfectly logical scientific explanation as scientific inquiry and knowledge have progressed. And think of how many inexplicable things have happened to each one of us. Sometimes things are just random. Sometimes there is causality that we can't begin to understand, sort of like that butterfly effect. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't have an explanation. Or perhaps it is coincidence, because coincidences do happen. Things can be temporally linked, but not causally linked. I also know, as a researcher and as a social scientist, that our brain seeks to find patterns and explanations for why things occur, as I said. We're prone to all sorts of biases and like to believe that we have lucky underwear or that something is a sign that we must proceed in some way or another because a divine being has intervened on our behalf. Whether this is a sign or simply intuition at play is anyone's guess, but I know what science tells me. That even the miraculous bolt from above that we call intuition is really just evidence that our wonderful big brain, this incredible computer that sits majestically between our shoulders, is really just processing things outside of our conscious ability to understand. There's an explanation for some things. We just don't understand that explanation yet. Einstein has a lot to say on this notion of miracles and the divine, strangely enough. Einstein is considered one of the greatest scientific minds of our time, but was also considered a deeply religious non-believer, his words, not ours. He's not quite an atheist, but not a full believer in this ideal of a personal God whose hand is guiding our everyday lives. In fact, he argues this notion of a personal God is a source of much conflict in the world. This should be of no surprise to those who have studied the long history of war and its connection to religious differences. Einstein is quoted as saying in 1941, "Nobody certainly will deny that the idea of the existence of an omnipotent, just, and omnibeneficent personal God is able to accord man solace, help, and guidance." We would agree with that. "Also, by virtue of its simplicity, it is accessible to the most undeveloped mind. But on the other hand, there are decisive weaknesses attached to this idea in itself, which has been painfully felt since the beginning of history." Einstein, a pacifist in belief in nature, wrote this while across the ocean the unthinkable was occurring in Nazi concentration camps. Over history, there are many of us who I know have asked the question, how can a just and an omnibeneficent God allow the Holocaust to occur? Because if you believe miracles are performed in the truest sense of the word and that God has a hand in our daily lives and our daily actions and decisions, then God had to have allowed the Holocaust to occur. God had to have allowed 9/11 to occur, allowed the tsunami that swept across the Indian Ocean in 2004, killing upwards of 300,000 people from Indonesia to India and then off to East Africa. I recently saw a movie called The Impossible about how a family of five was on vacation in Thailand at the time of the tsunami, and they were separated, mom and one son here, dad and the other two sons over here. They each thought the other did not survive. But yet, a true story, in the end, they were all reunited. It wasn't impossible. It was improbable. But it was possible. Was it a miracle? Was there a divine intervention? Why would a God reunite this family and not another? Did they pray more or better than others? For me and my sensibilities, I'm with Einstein and the Father James Keller, who is a Marian priest, who says, "The claim that God has worked a miracle implies that God has singled out certain persons for some benefit which many others do not receive, and implies that God is unfair. If God intervenes to save your life in a car crash, then what was he doing in Auschwitz? Thus, an all-powerful, all-knowing, and just God, as predicated in Christianity, would not perform miracles." I'm sure this was sacrilegious for the Catholics. For me, this implies an intentionality in the miracle choices of a personal God. God is choosing to perform miracles for some, but not for others, and that is not an assumption that makes me and many comfortable at all. Unitarians, I believe, maybe I wouldn't even say I would know, struggle with this idea of what a miracle is. And if we go back to our founding fathers, some of which are Unitarian, others of which come pretty darn close to that label, we can see that there was skepticism about the role of a personal God who performs miracles. Thomas Paine, whose parents were Quaker and who can best be classified as a non-Christian deist, said, "All the tales of miracles with which the Old and New Testament are filled are fit only for imposters to preach and fools to believe." John Adams, who we know is a Unitarian, stated simply similar ideas. "The question before the human race is whether the God of nature shall govern the world by his own laws or whether priests and kings shall rule it by fictitious miracles." Revolutionary War hero Ethan Allen, like Paine, a non-Christian deist, stated, "In those parts of the world where learning and science have prevailed, miracles have ceased. But in those parts of it, as are barbarous and ignorant, miracles are still in vogue." There was something really profound for me thinking about Alan's words. When learning and science are the norm, we don't rely on miracles to explain the world. But when things are barbarous, where things are barbarous and ignorant, we still depend on miracles to explain why things happen as they do. The further removed we are from science and learning, the more we depend on the omniscient being to manage our lives for us and thus believe in the truest sense of the miracles. As Einstein stated, the idea of a personal God and the idea of miracles is easy for the undeveloped mind to understand. My brother and I are very different in many respects. We both believe in reason and education and intellect to work through things. For my brother, his journey brought him through Christianity as a born-again Christian, and I think he still identifies as that. But now, more so, as a person at rest in this idea of being a spiritual but not a religious person. For me, my journey was never about believing in the basic tenets of Christianity, because much of those beliefs did not resonate with the scientist in me, or the feminist, but that's a different sermon entirely. For my brother, he has such a curious mind that as a child he felt he must have an explanation for his existence and for what lies ahead after death. Christianity provided him with those answers. He studied at a Christian liberal arts college, went to Israel, traveled the world, studied ancient documents and ancient languages, and rested comfortably in the idea that Jesus was a real man who existed in history, and that Jesus was a huge influence on the evolution of Christianity. He then took the leap to say that Jesus is the Son of God, manifest in human form. Having traveled with him a bit in Israel, I believed Jesus was a real man with a real message. But I was with him only until he took that last leap. For me, I also have a curious mind, but I didn't feel drawn to needing an explanation for my existence and for what lies ahead after death. I'm completely at peace with that uncertainty and inability to know right now, or even ever, you know, what's going to happen when I die. My brother, at one point in time, was not comfortable with that uncertainty, and he has told me in no uncertain terms that he's still uncomfortable with it, but he works with it. Because he couldn't sit with that uncertainty, the story of Jesus as the Son of God really resonated for him. The idea of this personal God and the miracles that go along with it made perfect sense. And it was and is the glue that fits together the parts of our human stories that we just cannot understand right now. But I don't need to know or believe that Jesus the social worker, as Sharona Johnson calls him, is also Jesus the Son of God. Knowing the message of Jesus the social worker is enough for me as a Unitarian, because that's a message of love and acceptance and joy in the mystery of life's experiences. And there's a place for Jesus the social worker in Unitarian dialogue and study, and I don't know if we do enough of that. But don't get me wrong here. I'm not saying that if you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, as many do, that there is something inherently wrong in that. There's not. We're all entitled to our own journey and our own explanation for that which is spiritual and good. Generally speaking, though, Unitarians don't believe in a Trinitarian God, this Father, Son, and Holy Spirit ideal. And that's why First UU is my home. I personally believe in Jesus as a social worker. I'm not concerned whether or not Jesus is the Son of God, because for me, it doesn't matter. His message is still clear. His message still matters to me, and it's not predicated on him being the Son of God for me to get that. So does that mean that miracles are not in the realm of possibility for Unitarians? Certainly not miracles in the formal, traditional sense of the word, because we don't really embrace the idea there's an omniscient God out there that interferes in our daily lives. The miracle of the loaves and the fishes and turning water into wine, as we heard in our reading, are much more to Unitarians about the story behind the miracle, not the belief in the miracle in and of itself. But as Einstein and my former housemate Saul Perlmutter would tell you, there are amazing mysteries out there about the origin of the cosmos. Oops. Ken, can you get it to move? I'm looking for the Einstein quote. And it's not, it's okay, it doesn't make or break. We'll move on. Einstein is attributed, as you see on the cover of your order of service, with saying there's only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle, the other is as though everything is a miracle. Okay? In the interest of full disclosure, while Einstein is attributed with saying this, in fact, there's no evidence that he did say it, although his words are believed to have inspired someone to make just such a statement. Thank you. You are awesome. Either way, I like this, and it's an idea that really resonates with me. If we believe that with reason and logic and science, nothing is a miracle, this could result in what I believe to be a mundane existence. The other day, driving home from picking up Sam at school, I noted that the sunset was beautiful. Sam, in his inimitable way, responded by saying, "You know it's the result of pollution, right?" My Asperger's boy. Logically and scientifically, yes, he was right. But it was still beautiful and mysterious and lovely to me. Miracles to me are a wonderful occurrence, a beneficial occurrence, something improbable like surviving this tsunami, but it is miraculous nonetheless. Not that when something is inexplicable, it must therefore be from a divine source, but because it is inexplicable or unknowable to me right now, or perhaps forever, and it is still wonderful and beautiful and beneficial and amazing. If I believe everything is a miracle, it means I take joy in all that I experience. The beautiful sunset, the child who waved at me at the store, the sun brightly shining today, and my dog who was napping in sunlight as I was writing my sermon. Every day is a gift if we bring presence to that situation and acknowledge that even if I don't understand something fully, there is some joy in it, something miraculous in it. Science is miraculous to me. The way the genome entwines and life is created is miraculous. The way our sun shines and all the right things come together for life to exist and thrive on this planet is miraculous. The Horsehead Nebula is miraculous. So many aspects of science may seem improbable, yet it was and is possible, and that is miraculous. As our reading today humorously notes, those things that were attributed to miracles around the life and times of Jesus can actually happen via science. Maybe in another 2,000 years we'll be able to understand those things that remain a mystery to us, or maybe it will take another 2,000 years after that, and it's okay if it doesn't, because there are so many things outside of our human existence to understand. While science explains much of it, it's still miraculous to me to know that there's this amazing journey ahead for scientists. I'm jealous of Saul Perlmutter and so many others that are doing cutting-edge stuff, because these scientists are on the edge of understanding some of those secrets, and that's miraculous. As Unitarians, we search for our truth. We believe in the energy and the interconnectedness of the human experience. We believe in justice and compassion and the inherent dignity of every person, because people are miraculous. We're inexplicable at times, no doubt, but we are wonderful and beautiful and beneficial and amazing, and we embody that as Unitarians. But I want us to remember to guard against full dependence on science and logic at the risk of losing our sense of wonder. I'm not talking about embracing alternative facts and abandoning science and logic, but I am encouraging us to see the magic and the wonder and the miracle that is in every aspect of our life, from the most mundane aspect to the most spectacular view. I'm encouraging you to see the miracles and wonder in science and in knowledge and in understanding, and I'm encouraging you to also see the miracle and the wonder in not understanding them, because they are still just as miraculous. We may never know the origins of our existence. Maybe it was just dumb chance. Maybe it was the workings of an intelligent life force. We can call it God, or for those Babylon 5 fans out there, maybe it really was the Vorlons or the Ancient Ones. Who knows? Maybe there is a God force, or a God particle, or a God energy that put all of this into motion. Maybe we will understand it, or maybe we never will, but it's still miraculous. So may it be.